bring in America's Sheriff David Clark.
Sheriff David Clark.
Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark.
Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark.
We simply cannot be great if we do not feel safe in our homes, on our streets, and in our schools. I see this every day at street level.
There's only one group in America that truly cares about the lives of black people. It's the American police officer.
The left just wants to target the gun. I've yet to see a gun lift itself off and fire itself.
It pains me to see that the political class has crawled into bed with the devil, the cop haters, while turning their backs on the men and women in law enforcement who are doing what they can to maintain law and order.
This is a tough profession. We know it could cost us our lives.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to make something very clear.
226 officers lost their lives while on duty in 2022.
Blue lives matter in America.
Outside of this one church town, there's a gold dirt road to a whole lot of nothing. Got a deed to the land, but it ain't my ground. This is God's country. We pray for rain and thank him when it's falling.
Good afternoon, everybody. We'll talk about those things a little later. A couple bags of coffee, one of the sponsors of some different ventures that I'm partaking in right now. One of them is a podcast called Straight Talk. And the other one I'll be coming out with a TV show will be coming out sometime this summer, I think. And it's going to feature law enforcement officers in action in the line of fire. And I'll be narrating as they show live footage, body cam footage, as to what goes down, what it's like, the experience that you all face on a daily basis. I'll tell you right now, I love you folks. I love you from the bottom of my heart. There's no group I'd rather be around. And I get to travel all over this country, meet with a lot of people, but there's no group I'd rather be around than street cops, real street cops. Give yourselves a hand, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I spent nearly four decades wearing the uniform of my community in both the urban Milwaukee Police Department, City of Milwaukee Police Department, and then as the sheriff of Milwaukee County, and it's been no higher honor. And I don't think there is but one. There's only one higher honor, and that's to get to wear the uniform of your country. But I think the second highest honor is to get to wear the uniform of your community. Because it's a privilege. It's an honor that people bestow on you, that it's a symbol of their trust. And they expect something in return. Okay, they expect integrity, honesty, character, those sorts of things. I think it's a reasonable thing to ask of people as they allow you, and I say allow you, to wear the uniform of your community. I'm going to talk about some controversial things this afternoon, late afternoon, for which and of which I will offer no apology. Now, I didn't come all this way to poke anybody in the eye with a sharp stick. But every once in a while, I may say something that might rub somebody the wrong way. And my advice, if I do, if that happens, is just get over it. It's just not that big a deal. Life's too short. But one of the things that you'll get from me, because I'm not going to take it for granted that everybody in here follows me or has followed my career or followed my history, I'll give it to you straight. It doesn't mean that I know everything. It doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody. But I have had a unique view of the world for, like I said, nearly four decades. So I've seen a lot. And I'm on two missions right now since I retired. Mission number one is to promote the furtherance of liberty and freedom here in the United States. And job 1A is to defend the profession of law enforcement, to defend the honor, the courage, the integrity, the sacrifice that all of you make on a daily basis. And things aren't going all that well for us right now, and it's been that way, I think, since 2014. The ugly days of Ferguson, Missouri, was when this thing really intensified, this hatred toward the American police officer. And folks, I remember watching it on TV. I was still the elected sheriff at the time. And I sat up there and watched this profession get pounded on a daily basis. We were hung up in the air like a piñata, and people were just taking whacks at this profession trying to tear it down. And I sat up there and stood up there and I watched this happen. And really what I was hoping was that somebody in a law enforcement executive position would rise up and start to beat this thing back and to start to whack away at these cop haters. And you know what? It didn't happen. So finally I had had enough. And I said, if nobody is going to do it, then I'll do it. And I knew the perils, especially being an elected official. I knew the perils involved, the danger of stepping out into that political environment to take this thing on. But here's what I was thinking at the time. You know, I was the sheriff now, right? Kind of far removed from the front lines. Although I used to still go out there and police, make stick-ups, traffic stops, so on and so forth. But as a chief executive, you're a little removed from the street, the daily dangers. But I never forgot that. Because where you sit today, I once sat. I spent nearly 10 years in uniform patrol. Then I got promoted to detective and worked in criminal investigations. And I got promoted to mid-management. I was a lieutenant. Then I got promoted to captain with all within the Milwaukee Police Department, and then I became the sheriff. So I've stood in those levels, and I've seen what it's like, but the thing is, I've never forgotten about it. So I was watching this profession take this pounding, and I thought to myself, you know, I send people into harm's way every day. Every day that a law enforcement officer takes the street to start their tour of duty, I'm placing them as the chief executive in harm's way. And the least that I could do at that point was to let the men and women that I send into harm's way every day at least to go out there with the confidence that if something went horribly wrong, like Ferguson, but if something went horribly wrong through no fault of the officer, I was going to have their back. That was important to them. That was important to their families. And it's the least I could do. And then I retired. Wanted to move on to some other things in life. You know, there's kind of a shelf life to this stuff. There really is. And you better recognize it. And you better read the handwriting on the wall when it appears that it might be time to go and let somebody else do this for a little while. But it's still in me. I tell people, if you cut me right now, the blood won't be red. I bleed blue. I bleed blue, ladies and gentlemen. To this day, I still have that urge, that desire to give back now. Not to just walk into the sunset, because that's the easy thing to do. You know that. You retire, you move on, you're like, hey, I did my time. It's somebody else's turn. But I decided, which is why I said job 1A, not job 2, job 1A, to defend this profession for the people that I left behind, the people who worked under me, the people who worked for me. I still owe them something. And now that I have these platforms, you know, I'm all over the place, right? I'm going to put those platforms to good use. Like I said, first of all, to defend the furtherance of freedom and liberty in America, and the next is to defend this profession of law enforcement, which is in tatters right now. And it's probably going to be that way for a while. And I tell lay people when I go out and speak, I say, you know, these cops, they're not looking for a pat on the back. They're not looking for anybody to feel sorry for them. They just want to know that if something goes horribly wrong, and up to and including losing their lives, that their families will be taken care of and that their death will not have been in vain. I said, that's all these cops want. Give them the resources, give them the political support, let them do their job. This is not a perfect world. You know this. Everything that I'm going to talk to you about today, you already know. I'm not here to lecture you. But I think it's important every once in a while for people to just, you folks, just to stop and think about some of this stuff. Because we forget it. You go out there, you give it your best. Next thing you know, you're looking at a criminal charge, for heaven's sakes, an indictment. Because some idiot decided to provoke some sort of response from you, and then you're on the hook. And one of the things that I talk about a lot, to the chagrin of many law enforcement executives here in the United States, some might be here today, I'm hard on law enforcement executives because they're in a position that I was once in. And I felt it was important for me to put my well-being at risk. And I don't mean out on the street, but I'm talking about politically. I had to get elected, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't have the tenure that a lot of police executives have. The people could get rid of me at any time every 4 years. But you know what? That didn't matter to me. I said, I owe these folks something. And to this day, I will do what I can to use my platform. I'm involved in a couple of law enforcement officers' defense, legal defense, trying to help raise money for that, because this stuff gets very expensive. But when your freedom's on the line, you got to do it. You might have to go broke. You might go bankrupt, but you got to do everything you can. So that's another way that I'm trying to give back to this thing. So I'm going to go through some written things that I have here. And one of the reasons why I write things out is because I get accused of a lot. I get accused of saying shit that I didn't say. And so I like to be able to go back when that happens in some media, the New York Times or the Washington Post, and they still follow me, not because they're interested, they're waiting for me to step in it, say something clumsy or irresponsible. And so I like to prepare these things and write them down so I can go back and say, I never said that, or you took that out of context, here's what I said, and I can show them. So I don't freewheel it as much as I used to. But that's the danger that I have to live with now, but that's okay. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. If you want to follow me on Twitter, if you don't have to, but if you do, it's at Sheriff Clark, Clark with an E, C-L-A-R-K-E. On Facebook, it's at Sheriff David A. Clark, Clark with an E. And on Instagram, I think it's Sheriff David Clark. And then my Straight Talk podcast, it's on 20 different podcast platforms. But I use these platforms to help defend this profession that is very vital in our society, you know that. Your communities, without you, your communities would dissolve, disintegrate into chaos. Without the American law enforcement officer. The community knows that. They appreciate it. They're not as vocal as the cop haters. They're not as vocal as the know-it-alls, the politicians who want to crawl into bed, as I mentioned in one of the shots there, crawl into bed with the cop haters. But the community, they know they need you. So calendar year 2023 begins much like it ended in 2020 and 2021 and now into 2023. Police officers continue to be ambushed and gunned down in areas all across the nation, and violent crime continues to surge not only in large urban cities but in suburban areas as well. And still, elected officials continue to wring their hands as to what is causing it and how to mitigate it. In New York City in 1 week, two officers were killed in the line of duty while another two were shot and are expected to survive. In Houston, Texas, three officers were wounded in a shootout. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, my hometown, a sheriff deputy and a City of Milwaukee police officer were shot and are expected to survive. According to the National Gun Violence Archive, in the first 24 days of 2022, gunmen opened fire on cops 22 times, killing three. Another four officers have been ambushed in vehicle attacks. Even two police canines were shot and killed in the line of duty. And according to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, 2021 was the deadliest year on record for law enforcement officers' deaths. There is no doubt that there's a correlation between the animus coming from Democrat elected officials, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa. That steady drumbeat of hate with little counter narrative from people other than myself on a national level has eroded the respect and trust for this fine profession. This vilification has manifested itself in the violence toward police that we continue to see today. I have two remedies that could go a long way in restoring respect for police. Keep in mind that this hate for police didn't start overnight, and it won't turn back in the other direction overnight. But if we enact public policies today, we can start the arduous path back toward a return toward focusing on officer respect and officer safety. The first is to stop with this inane idea of police reform and call for making it a capital federal offense for murdering a police officer with a death sentence handed out as a penalty. And there should be no more than a 2-year window for the defendant to exercise appeals. This would ensure consistency nationwide, since some states, as you know, currently don't have the death penalty. The second remedy is for people in Congress and every state legislature to pass a resolution condemning any more hateful rhetoric toward police. Then we would have all of these two-bit politicians on record as to their position of support or non-support for police. Next, I want to turn toward the continued escalation of violence across America. It is predicted that the upward trend in street violence that we have seen in 2020, 2021, and 2023 will continue to happen. For a snapshot, five people were shot, killing one in Washington, D.C. Three people were gunned down in Chicago, including an 8-year-old girl. And six people were found shot execution style in a Milwaukee residence known for drug activity. In Philadelphia, so far this year, there have been 90 carjackings after 750 carjackings in 2021. Milwaukee saw a record year in car thefts with over 10,000 incidents. Just because the calendar year turns from 2021 to 2022 and 2023 does not mean that cities get to start at zero, reporting as if all the crime that happened the previous year and all of the victims that claimed didn't happen. As I said earlier, these are trends that will continue if not abated. The most startling thing to me is there have been few law enforcement executives, as I said, who have put forth a comprehensive plan or strategy to combat the street violence. What I hear from feckless city officials and police executives are platitudes. They express concern, condolences for the victims, and call for the violence to stop as if on command it's going to stop on its own. They talk about looking for root causes and reinvesting in cities, which is code language to me for spending millions more in taxpayer dollars that will lead to nothing. Police executives continue to embark on this fool's errand of community policing. They erroneously believe that regaining and rebuilding trust with minority communities will lead to lower rates of crime. Recently in Milwaukee County, murder charges had to be dismissed because a key witness could not be located for trial. That's when I ask, how's that community policing working out? This whole community policing craze was first spawned in the early 1980s. Let me stop there a second. I know about this craze because I was probably in policing maybe 3 years when the buzz phrase was community policing. That's 40 years ago. We have spent billions trying to rebuild trust to no avail. This is foolhardy. We have turned cops, and this is what pisses me off, we've turned you guys from crime fighters into community ambassadors. Let's stop this nonsense. Besides the law-abiding people, they already trust and respect you. Nothing will build trust in minority communities faster than showing them that you can keep them safe from the criminal element. Nothing will build community trust faster than to show business owners that you will protect their property from thefts and burglaries. That means lowering crime rates. Business owners who watch their businesses looted and then set on fire during a riot doesn't instill community trust, especially after frontline cops, through no fault of their own, were given stand-down orders. Neither does a mother finding out that her child was killed after being struck by an errant bullet in a drive-by shooting. Restoring trust starts with going after and harassing known criminals. Leave everybody else alone. If an officer does not know who the perpetrators of disorder are in their beat and who the career criminals are, then they're not really doing their job. Notice that earlier here I mentioned that six people were found shot execution style in a known drug house. My first thought was, if the people living in that neighborhood knew it was a drug house, then why didn't police? And if police did know, what were they doing to shut it down? It has always been an important element of successful policing to know your beat up and down, inside and out. In fairness to you frontline officers today, you don't have the resources, nor do you have the political support since the defund police movement to effectively dedicate yourselves to routine patrol and surveillance ops. And even if you do make an arrest, George Soros-funded prosecutors are not prosecuting criminals. Here's the plan for any police executive out there who wants to become the next Bill Bratton of law enforcement. Here's what the plan looks like. Restore broken windows policing. Focus on order maintenance activities. If you do not know what that is, then get a copy of Bratton's book titled Turnaround: How America's Top Cop Reversed a Crime Epidemic in New York City. Read it, study it, just copy what he did. Come up with a written plan to succeed. The plan has to have metrics so you can track on how well you're doing or how well you're not doing. The stuff that is yielding results of, do more of. The stuff that isn't, do less of. Have a solid information sharing process. Information needs to move up, down, and across the entire agency. Your resources are finite. If you're a police executive, let the mayor know what you're doing. If he doesn't approve, then go rogue and do it anyway. Dare him to fire you for trying to restore law and order in the chaos. Let the local media know what you are doing ahead of time as well. Notify community stakeholders because you'll need their support with what you're going to do. Let the city council know and tell them you'll need more resources. Notify the United States attorney that you'll need grant money to lighten the load on property and business taxpayers and that you are sending violent career criminals to be prosecuted at the federal level for more certainty in prosecutions and stricter sentencing. Now that everybody is aware about what is about to happen, execute the plan. Hold commanders accountable for results. Check on their progress frequently. Forget that community policing initiatives bullshit. Now I want to begin talking about a few developments that occurred recently there that are begging for additional comment, and who better to provide that commentary than yours truly. The first comes out of the state of Arizona, where the legislature recently passed a bill making it a misdemeanor offense for anyone filming a police officer within 8 feet after having been warned to stop doing so. The bill signed into law by Governor Doug Ducey is intended to create a buffer to prevent clashes with police and bystanders in tense situations. My initial reaction to that when I read the story was, it's about time. We've all sat and watched demonstrators and rioters get right up in the face of police officers who are standing in a police line and are yelling obscenities, spitting and throwing objects like rocks, batteries, and urine and feces-filled balloons at police when the officers are doing nothing more than holding the line, as they say. You have also undoubtedly seen bystanders with their cell phone where police are conducting a field interview or a traffic stop. This is an officer safety issue, as you know, as it distracts officers away from the subject they have detained and thus have to watch both that person and the crowd or group heckling police. Every state should enact such a law. Officers are trained to keep people out of their lunge area, that amount of distance between them and a subject. That area keeps distance between someone going after their gun or another piece of their equipment that once obtained can be turned on and used against the officer. What I find peculiar, however, is that they determine 8 feet as the distance. They should have just made it an even 10, if for no other reason than to give police a few more feet of protection. The next news story comes out of Miami, where a Miami-Dade police officer conducting a traffic stop on a motorist not wearing a seatbelt made an utterance that has many people, including the media, losing their minds. During the exchange, the officer asked for the driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance, and told the driver to turn off the engine. That's standard stuff. The driver could not find his license or registration and didn't turn the car off as ordered. The officer, after receiving the driver's license, says in an ongoing exchange, "A simple thing, man. This is how you guys get killed out here." Okay, not the smoothest way to talk to people, but not the worst thing I've ever heard cops say in dealing with the public. Now the vultures are circling overhead in this anti-police environment, trying to make it on the level of some of the other high-profile incidents involving police. Yes, over this. Now everybody is giving their opinion as to what the officer meant by that statement. My reaction is, yeah, I heard the officer say it. Who flippin' cares? That officer will have to defend what he meant by his statement, and now the Metro-Dade police have started an internal investigation and have removed the officer from street duty and placed him on administrative desk duty for the investigation to be completed. Seriously? Over this? That reaction by the Miami-Dade Police Department feeds into the hair-on-fire reaction from the cop-hating crowd. An appropriate disposition here, and remember, I had to make these kind of decisions, so I'm speaking from experience. An appropriate disposition here would be for the officer supervisor to counsel him or her with a verbal warning about interpersonal communications, maybe even order some additional training on it. The chief of the department should have said to the media soon after the incident, "I've made my decision, move on." Speaking of how guys get killed out here, another police deadly use of force in Akron, Ohio has captured national attention. Although each incident is instinctively different, as you know, there are some similar aspects. This involves a police stop for a traffic violation. The driver refused to pull over and stop. The driver leading police on a high-speed pursuit during which it is reported that he fired shots at pursuing officers. Additional facts that he finally pulls over and continues to flee on foot. Oh, and another thing, he's wearing a ski mask over his head, like that's normal behavior. Now let's unpack this. Fleeing from police, according to a Supreme Court case, Illinois versus Wardlaw, it says that that is the height of suspicious activity, and the police then have reasonable suspicion to pursue to find out why the suspect is fleeing. Leading police in a high-speed vehicle pursuit puts the officers in grave danger as well as other motorists who are in the area. And then there's the firing on pursuing officers. As the suspect is fleeing, he turns toward the officer, making eye contact. As you know, that's called target acquisition, a move necessary for the armed subject to complete before firing on them. It is therefore, by the law, reasonable for officers responding who have already been fired upon to think that this guy would shoot at them again. They opened fire, killing the suspect. The suspect's gun was found inside the vehicle. Now comes the typical knee-jerk reaction from the media, the family, and other cop haters. About 60 shots were fired by the reported 7 or 8 officers responding during the incident. Everybody's all up in arms about the amount of shots fired. I'm not. The suspect was armed, as I indicated, and fired on officers during the pursuit. As far as I'm concerned, all bets are off. Nothing in the law on use of force indicates the amount of shots officers can fire after being shot at. They are allowed to use a level of force to overcome the resistance, not just meet it. I know how officers train in these situations in a sterile environment of a shooting range. We train them to fire in 2 or 3 round bursts and then reassess. But folks, anybody who thinks that that will actually be the case in high adrenaline situations where you have already been shot at is out of their mind. I've investigated police officer use of force shootings. Most of the time, they can't even tell you how many times they fired. That's normal. As part of their brain shuts down. They're not counting the rounds like on a firing range. They'll get to explain their actions. Under what I've just described, however, the chief of the agency should get out ahead of this to frame a narrative that gets into the minds of the public before the lies and misinformation that will come from the media and the cop haters start. In most cases, just saying, "I can't comment, it's an ongoing investigation," is no longer effective. You're allowing the cop haters to form the narrative. Remember, hands up, don't shoot. Here are a few examples of the headlines from major news sources on this incident. Video shows Akron cops killed unarmed man in a hail of bullets. That was a headline. Another headline, sickening footage shows Akron cops killed an unarmed man in a hail of bullets. Another headline, Jalen Walker, that's the guy killed, was unarmed when 8 officers opened fire. One story even pointed out that the suspect Walker was unarmed and running away. Obviously, certain important facts that were left out of stories like these, like the fact that he refused to comply with a law enforcement officer's lawful command to take him into custody, and instead he led police on a high-speed pursuit with Walker firing on officers before they fired on him. And like I said, he was wearing a ski mask. The investigation is ongoing, but my experience in investigating these police use of force leads me to believe that these officers acted reasonably under the circumstances. And like the Miami-Dade officer said, that's how these guys get killed out there. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for your service to your community. I tell every law enforcement officer that I meet, keep your heads held high and keep fighting. I'm proud of you guys. I love you. And we'll come out of this okay. Just give it time. Thanks for being here. May God bless you and may God continue to bless the United States of America. Thank you very much.